Good evening. My name is Michael Werster. This is Prosody, an interview program with poets and writers. I'm tonight's guest host, filling in for Jan Beatty with a very special guest, Ann Burnham. Ann will be reading from Coda, a new volume of poetry by Marilyn Donnelly. And I'm sure that the audience, there's two questions that the audience, of course, will have. One is, who is Marilyn Donnelly? And two, who is Ann Burnham? But before we do that, let's give you a chance to get enthusiastic by having Ann read several of Marilyn's poems.
Summer Ceremony. The wedding tents are rising on the manicured lawn by the reedy marsh, white silken canopy shining against the scrub pine. The bride hides inside her flowered bedroom, lost in the reflecting pool of a pine-framed mirror, wondering if she should fly off with the grey-washed gulls who wait impatiently at the edge of the blue bay. What followed? The night of the terrorist attack, the moon was hidden in a star-filled sky over Cape Cod, where the Big Dipper hung so low on the horizon it seemed laden with tears.
Thank you, Anne. Welcome to Prosody.
Thank you, Michael. Lovely to be here with you.
So let's talk about that first question. Who is Marilyn Donnelly?
Marilyn Donnelly is an extraordinary and wonderful woman who has lived all her life in Pittsburgh and has been writing poems for probably 60 years. She is a natural wordsmith. Mm-hmm. You can't talk with Marilyn but that it rhymes, or she comes up with a wonderful way to articulate a feeling, and most of it humorous. You would not know that from the first two poems I read, because they're very sober, measured, thoughtful poems about particular incidents. But she is a natural humorist, and to be with her is like, it's like having champagne all the time. Mm. You know, just effervescent and wonderful.
That's a really nice way of putting it. I've known Marilyn not well, like yourself, but for many years, she's always a great supporter of the International Poetry Forum, and as you said, an effervescent personality. When she would walk into a room, it would just make you feel good.
Exactly. She lights it up. And one of my great memories of the Poetry Forum is seeing her sitting in the front row in absolute rapt attention to whatever poet
right.
from wherever around the world was reading. And her attention on that reader was just absolute.
Now, Anne, who is Ann Burnham, and how does it happen that you edited this book of poems for Autumn House Press? We should mention Autumn House Press is the publisher. They're a national literary publisher based here in Pittsburgh.
Well, we certainly should mention Autumn House Press because it does extraordinary work. And both you and I have the privilege of being on the board of directors of this press, which is, as you said, nationally known and doing a great job, not just for Pittsburghers, but for writers around the country. But who am I? Well, I was a member of the Advisory Council of the International Poetry Forum for many, many years. I'm an editor by profession and a great friend of Marilyn Donnelly's. And one day Marilyn said that one of her regrets was that she had never published a volume of poetry. Now, she had a small chapbook called Benediction of Love, uh-huh. which was a result of her being a member of the Mad Women in the Attic, which is that marvelous writing group at Carlo University run by Jan Beatty, your regular host
right.
here on Prosody. And people responded to that small chapbook so positively that the editor of Autumn House Press was encouraged to think that we could pull together Marilyn's other poems into a volume. So because I love her so much and because I'm such a fan of her poetry, I spent probably about 6 months working with her, pulling poems from drawers and piano stools and files, folders and binders and bookshelves and cupboards and all over the house. There were poems scattered everywhere. So we had to pull them all together before we could decide how we would cull them into a small volume, which we did. And it was a great process doing so. So much laughter, so many tears, because Marilyn's poetry touches so many chords. humor, pathos, deep, deep, deep feeling about the inherent tragedy of life and how no matter how good things look on the surface, everybody confronts tragedy at some point in their life. And she and her husband certainly knew it firsthand, and yet they could rise above it. And some of the poems deal with that.
Now, we have to share with our audience the reason that you're here rather than Marilyn. And,
right.
You know, this is
We talked about tragedy, Michael. The tragedy about Marilyn is that between the time we had put the manuscript together and it was accepted by Autumn House and the time the book was published, Marilyn suffered a collapse and is now in a skilled nursing home in Massachusetts where the majority of her family live, where they can surround her with love and attention and affection. And it breaks my heart to think that she isn't around to accept the well-deserved accolades that have come from all over the world in response to this book.
So while we celebrate today her work, we mourn the fact that she's unable to appreciate this as much as we wish she could.
Exactly. And yet the irony is that when she was here in Pittsburgh before she went to Massachusetts, and when I would visit her, I would chat with her and talk with her. And sometimes then I would just start one of the poems.
Mm-hmm.
And by golly, through that in terrible haze, she was able to finish the poem.
Wonderful. Let's hear some more poems.
Right. Well, as we talked about, Marilyn's life has been very rich. And she has this extraordinary ability to make little poems that just sort of are like darts. And some of them are very, very funny. And I'd love to read some of the funny ones.
Good.
Because I don't want anyone to think that reading Marilyn Donnelly's poetry is a downer. On the contrary, they make you laugh. Here's one that is 11 words. And I think it's particularly apt for the corporate times in which we live. It's called Human Inflation. Many CEOs come to a juncture where their EGOs need acupuncture. My sister in England read that and she said, she opened the book at that point and she said she just burst out laughing. But here's another one. Medieval meditation. The ubiquitous unicorn trots through intricate tapestries filled with flower-laden maidens, darting him adoring glances. Chances are they admire his horn. And how about this? Last request. I mourn the morns I shall not see, but know, sweetheart, that you will be watching the sun come up for me. Darling love, grief is brief, I'm told, so when you watch the day turn gold, wait to take another till I'm cold.
Ah.
What are your favorite funny poems, Michael?
There are two poems. I like all the poems in the book. There are two that particularly speak to me. One is not funny. The other one is. Let me read. Do you mind if I read two poems?
Oh, please.
The first one I'm going to read is a poem called Counting. On an unpaved road high in Peru's Altiplano, 15,000 feet above sea level, crammed in a colectivo, we are playing Count the Cars. There are few automobiles other than our old Dodge, three or four trucks with slatted wood sides, packed with campesinos, a single Jeep, two cowboys on mud-brown horses at a steady canter, herds of sheep, thin black dogs with cunning eyes, and matted tails, a hillside of llama. As children on our way to the seashore, we played Count the Cows. Double the number should you pass a white horse. Drop all your cows when you come to a cemetery. My sister always chose the right side of the car for luck. I took the left and lost. Now she sits at the right hand in another kingdom while we count cars on an impossible road high in the Altiplano, leaving aside all our losses, searching only for white horses and the paved road to Arequipa. I really love that poem.
I do too.
And it's wonderful in that long first stanza, that list. Campesinos, a single Jeep, two cowboys on mud-brown horses at a steady canter, herds of sheep, thin black dogs with cunning eyes and matted tails, a hillside of llama. And then, of course, beginning with the next stanza, it becomes more than a travelogue when she starts talking about her sister, who is, of course, not with her on this trip.
And dead.
Exactly.
Exactly. And Marilyn's poems, they can start out very lightly, if you like, and then they can take this twist into a deeper realm where they resonate very powerfully with the kinds of things we all experience: loss, tragedy, love, and they allow you to empathize and to recognize those same feelings within yourself. And I think that's the beauty of any poem, is that it leads you to a deeper understanding of your own emotions and feelings.
I think Marilyn was a nice synthesis of an openness to life and someone who read a lot and read a lot of poetry. And so her feel for the qualities of life, both the positive and the negative, have a sophistication that is just lends itself so superbly to her poems. Mm-hmm. Now, this other poem that's a favorite of mine, it's called Reflection on Fame. I used to fear anonymity. Like Willie Loman, everyone deserves recognition. I saw Joan Crawford one time. It was enough. She wore a white turban of slithery jersey, studded with the Rogers ransom from the Five and Dime, and a dress with shoulder pads as wide as a wide receiver's. That sight made me a believer in simplicity, anonymity. It made me shun rhinestones. Now I wish to be small like the wren. Believe me, Emily Dickinson had the right idea, settled at home in her private New England bones.
Isn't that marvelous?
Absolutely.
It's just it says it all. It just says it all.
Now, Marilyn traveled a lot. Am I right?
Well, she had a home on Cape Cod where many of her poems are set. And in Florida, she would go to Florida for part of the winter. I think she had traveled as a younger woman, but she had has a wonderful family of seven children, and that keeps you pretty grounded.
What a life. Seven children and yet producing these wonderful
and
poems.
And these wonderful poems, right. I thought I'd like to read a poem in the same genre.
Great.
It's called A Trio for Andy Warhol. And again, it's looking at fame with a slightly jaundiced eye. And this is three short stanzas. All around the mulberry bush, the monkey chases the vulture. The artist pulls the stopper out, and pop goes the culture. 2. After copying Campbell's soup cans, you silkscreen overblown icons of the famous and their clones, then serve as bored and boring Boswell to the anointed sheik. Pale, impudent voyeur, which of your arts will endure? 3. Dear, cold Andy Warhol, does it warm your heart to know your greatest art comes as dead celeb?
Wow.
I mean, that's a tough poem, isn't it?
Yeah.
It sort of cuts through a lot of the hype that surrounds somebody like Andy Warhol.
Absolutely.
Right.
I want to remind our audience, you're listening to Prosody, the program in which poets and writers are interviewed and share their work. And we're here on WYEP-FM. That would be 91.3 on your dial. Anne, please continue.
She has a wonderful short poem in here, again, bringing out her funny side. And it's called Valentine for Richard Wilbur. Now, Richard Wilbur is the dean of American poetry. Sam Hazo calls him the Mozart of American poetry. He's one of the finest poets, I think, that this country has ever produced. And he has a beautiful tribute to Marilyn on the back of the book, where he says, Marilyn Donnelly sees things and sees them honestly. There is love in her poems for persons and for the world. And there is also a constant reflexive awareness of all that is dark and doubtful. What a tribute him. But here's her Valentine for Richard Wilbur, which I just love. It says, Ah, Dickie dear, No one has your way with meter and rhyme. So won't you come up and show me your Sestina sometime?
My gosh.
I mean,
what a sense of humor.
Laugh.
What a sense, of,
sense
humor.
Of humor.
One of the things that I think anyone would remember about Marilyn is her smile.
Oh, lighting up a room.
Right.
Lighting up a room. Here's another two-liner that just hits the button. Thoughts after reading the Scarlet Letter. Had only Hester known about testosterone.
There you go.
But, you know, I really do feel that the poems that Marilyn will be most celebrated for and most remembered for are the sequence of poems that formed the basis of Benediction of Love, which we have put at the final part of this book. We have sort of poems that are about myriad subjects, and then we have poems about her family, and then we have poems about fame and the funny poems, and then these are a series of love poems which are dedicated to her husband, Tom. And the huge irony and the tragedy, again, in Marilyn's life is that Tom died the night before we were having a celebration of this book here in Pittsburgh. I mean, the timing is just so amazing, it's hard to believe. It's Greek in its tragedy.
Right.
But if it's all right with you, Michael, I'd love to read some of these
poems.
Please,
please.
They're like a sustained hymn.
Go for it.
Tom was a great sailor, and on Cape Cod he would take all the family out in the boat. And the children have wonderful memories of him saying, "Okay, troops," and they'd all line up and jump aboard the boat and go sailing. But this is a poem called Down East. You look at me with such love this morning. The earth shifts beneath us, and all of Maine moves into the Atlantic with a startled sky scurrying behind.
Uh-huh.
What an image. And this poem is the one that Garrison Keillor chose to read on his national program. And he has also recommended that people acquire this book of poetry. He chose this book as one of his recommendations, which I think is a tremendous
tribute. Absolutely.
And he read it twice, and maybe I'll take the liberty of doing it.
Please.
Because it's like a stone dropped into a well. It's called Passage. He who took the steps by two now pauses on each tread, and I, who love him so, am filled with dread. He who took the steps by two now pauses on each tread, and I, who love him so, am filled with dread. It's so...
What a marvelous poem. That's one of those classic poems that, you know, if you stumbled across it and it said that it was written in the 6th century somewhere in the British Isles, you wouldn't quarrel with that. You would accept that. It's just such a classic. Read it one more time, please.
I will. And, you know, Sam Hazo has always said that a good poem is not one you remember, but one you can't forget.
Right, yeah.
And there's a difference.
Yes.
Passage. He who took the steps by two now pauses on each tread, and I, who love him so, am filled with dread.
You know, one of the things that Marilyn does in poetry, there's this drive to be inventive, to be creative, to come up with things that nobody's ever imagined or thought of before. And a real skill of poetry, and this is the greatest poets were able to do this, is to take something that we understand and to express it so simply and clearly that it haunts us.
Exactly.
And that's what she's done in this poem.
Yeah. That's beautifully said, Michael.
Thanks.
Yeah. This is another beautiful poem, and it's called Sustenance. Even at night, lying by your side in velvet darkness, I turn to you as a flower turns to sun for light and life and the necessary benediction of love.
Mm-hmm. This is the kind of poetry, and again, I'm projecting myself onto our audience, but this is the kind of poetry I think that encourages people to seek more poetry.
Right.
Yeah.
So many people think poetry, I don't understand that stuff. It's too esoteric. It's beyond me. But not these poems.
Well, if you pick up the wrong book of poetry, it may be great poetry, but if it's the wrong book of poetry for you, you might say, well, no more poetry for me.
Exactly.
But this is the poetry that I think will inspire people to seek out more poetry.
Here's another beautiful poem. It's called Preparations. And it was written after the death of Marilyn and Tom's eldest daughter, Daria, who incidentally was the poetry editor of Commonweal magazine.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And she died very young. And it's what Yeats calls unserviceable sorrow. And Marilyn wrote this poem, which is oblique. It's called Preparations. When sorrow is too deep to talk about, we lie side by side in silence, watching autumn leaves in late afternoon sun form unfathomable patterns on the drawn shades, girding ourselves for what will be the longest winter in our shared history. How do you respond to that? Silence is
appropriate.
The only appropriate response, right. Really. Yeah. And here's another lovely one. Afterthought. Twin stars from winter sky hide in your eyes. The cave of your mouth is warm as June earth. The sea sings its siren songs in your loins. These are the things I forgot to tell you. Here's another beautiful short poem again in this series of Benediction of Love. It's called Lauds. Purple anemones drenched in sunlight startle me from sleep, the wild blooming of joy. God, grant me a bit more time on your lovely earth.
That's wonderful.
Isn't it lovely? That's what I think we feel when spring comes. And here's a lovely one too, called a love poem. All night we rode the crest of love, washing up on the shore of dawn with darkness gone.
Let me remind everyone, we are Prosody, the interview program with poets and writers, 91.3 WYEP-FM. I'm your guest host, Michael Werster, and you've been listening and will continue to listen for a while yet to Ann Burnham, who is the editor of Coda by Marilyn Donnelly, published by Autumn House Press.
Well, one quick thing, Michael, I just want to tell the listeners that if they wanted a copy of Coda, they can call Autumn House Press at 412-381-4261, or they can go to Amazon and find it there.
Great.
But just getting back to some of these wonderful poems, I like this one as we look at our house. It's called In Last Light. In last light seeking peace, the heart sings, no more things, no more things. It's a
marvelous
salutary. And here's a very funny poem, I think, but again, it has a twist of irony at the end of it. A Dorothy Parker kind of night. The stars are incandescent, the moon a perfect crescent, the sea is opalescent, the world is effervescent, my heart is convalescent. Where's my antidepressant?
Isn't that marvelous? That does remind you of Dorothy Parker.
Doesn't it just? I mean, it's perfectly in her way of making a poem, too. You know, it just captures her perfectly.
Her New England residency certainly influenced her poetry. Would you agree?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah. I hadn't realized that before, but sometimes hearing the poems are different from reading the poems. And one of the qualities of New England poetry is the quality of light. And I find that in some of these poems, the mention of light and how it works.
Here's a short poem called Late Summer, and I think that captures that. It's so graphic. White, simple, slatted Adirondack chairs sit on the green lawn, a presence in their emptiness as they guard the dawn.
Wow. Are there more Marilyn Donnelly's poems that might turn up in a future book or Is this
literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of poems.
I know there was a lot of work, yeah.
She has the most marvelous sequence of poems in ABCDary, poems that begin ABCD. She has a wonderful set of poems on animals. It's just marvelous. She has lots more poems on personalities like Andy Warhol and Dorothy Parker. And again, wonderful, wonderful poems that just, it hit the button. It was very, very, very hard to choose 60 poems for a small book. But maybe we'll go back there.
I have the fault of sometimes being too much of an optimist. And we know that poetry does not lead the bestseller lists, but I'm always optimistic that with truly wonderful poetry, there will be such a demand for further volumes by that poet. And I would like to think that about Marilyn's work, that as it travels through the world via this book, that people will just want more to hold in their hand.
I couldn't agree with you more, Michael. The volume, Coda, ends with a beautiful poem, which is such an uplifting poem and in the face of the tragedy of life. And it's simply called Swans. I have read where swans sing once before dying. I have never heard such a song, but can imagine how it must be. The snow-white neck flexing heavenward as a sweet trill builds in the throat, then explodes in such an exaltation of primordial notes that startled angels gather their wings for fear a rustle of feathers should disturb the triumphant song.
That's another one I want to hear again.
Okay. It's lovely. It's simply called Swans. I have read where swans sing once before dying. I have never heard such a song, but can imagine how it must be. The snow-white neck flexing heavenward as a sweet trill builds in the throat, then explodes in such an exaltation of primordial notes that startled angels gather their wings for fear a rustle of feathers should disturb the triumphant song.
I can imagine Yeats nodding his head and agreeing with that poem. Yes. And, of course, his poem about the swan was quite different from this one.
It was indeed.
But that's such a beautiful poem.
It is.
I think we do have time for a couple more.
We do. Well, may I read one that I think came from Marilyn's time as a docent at the Museum of Art here in at the Carnegie, and it's simply called On Mondays, and I love this poem. It's called, as I said, On Mondays. On Mondays, when the museums are closed and a handful of guards look the other way or read their newspapers, all of the figures step out of golden frames to stroll the quiet halls or visit among old friends. Picasso's twisted ladies rearrange themselves to trade secrets with the languid odalisques of Matisse, while sturdy Rembrandt men shake the dust from their velvet tams and talk shop. Voluptuous Renoir women take their rosy children by the hand to the water fountains where they gossip while eating Cézanne's luscious red apples. Even Van Gogh, in his tattered yellow straw hat, seems almost happy on Mondays when the museums are closed.
Anne, thank you so much for being with us this evening and for bringing us the poetry of Marilyn Donnelly.
It was a great pleasure, Michael. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's show featuring the work of poets and writers. 91.3 WYEP.